Yes. This is HeritageRadioNetwork.com. But you already knew that because you found us on the internet. And we are burning down the house in which we tear down, lay forth, and build up the ideas, passions, fantasies, obsessions, biases that inform and direct the creation of our built environment. I'm Curtis B. Wayne. This evening, we are sponsored by whom, fellows? Fairway Market. Your best place in New York to get the most fresh and wonderful food. I really love the Fairway store that's under the West Side Highway. When you go to the meat department there, you are walking in the cooler. You're not just looking at refrigerator cases. You're in the cooler with the meat men. It's sort of like, in a retro kind of way, like Rocky pounding the sides of beef. Although I've never seen anyone actually tenderizing in that way in Fairway. We love Fairway. Soon coming to my neck of the woods, Stamford, Connecticut, in 2011. Our guest this evening is Julie Jovine, who's the executive editor of that preeminent source of news for the architectural community, The Architect's Newspaper. And I understand she was key in its expansion from New York, now with West Coast and Midwest editions. Julie was a features reporter and editor at the New York Times and the New York Times Magazine. She's the author of Michael Graves, A Compact Design Portfolio, Modern Americana from High Craft to High Glam. I kind of like that's good. As well as several other tasty contributions to our understanding of the world of design. Julie has written for Architectural Digest, the German edition, Art and Auction, Art Review, and Architectural Record. What is even more interesting, I think, is that if you ever find yourself lost in the woods of Maine with Julie, you will not go hungry because she can discern the difference between a delicious chanterelle mushroom and a deadly jack-o'-lantern. When not writing about architecture, Julie imagines herself as the doyenne of her own 18th century style salon, which is okay, Julie, because I imagine that I'm channeling William Makepeace Thackeray in my own meager scribblings. Welcome as we burn down the house. Speak up. Hello.
Thank you very much. I'm glad
come a little closer. That's good. I wanted to start out with the notion of what's happening in New York, if anything, in general. Almost everybody I know, and I know a fair number of architects, is just dying. It's some people say they have work, but I don't see them working 60-hour weeks. Well, what's your take?
Well, it's funny you should ask about right now, because right now, actually, probably about 45 minutes ago, the 28th Annual Awards for Excellence in Design happened, and Mayor Bloomberg was delivering all kinds of awards to worthy bits of architecture that you'll probably never see or realize that they had architects behind them. Things like maintenance plants and firehouses.
Cool. All right.
That's actually really happening here in New York. I know you think it's all about the Gehry building that happened on 18th Street or the Nivelle thing that's going up across the street from it, but that's happening too. But actually in Bloomberg, and not interested in getting into politics, he has kind of thrown his weight into design, and the people that he has working on it are pretty devoted group.
Super. Dan has brought our pizza. This is one of the perks of doing radio at a pizzeria.
I can't talk at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why you're not a host here yet. You have to learn how to scarf down pizza margherita between conversations. But that's municipal funding.
That's true.
And these are built works, which means that they were finished a while ago.
Not so at all. In fact, hope fingers are crossed that they'll ever get built at all. I mean, I look at this list of things.
Oh, wait, so these are designs that are designed but not built.
Since 1898, the Art Commission has thrown itself into these Design Excellence Awards for city projects, municipal projects, as you say. Who did you say is the Art Commission.
Art Commission.
It used to be known as the Design Commission. It's a kind of a flaky little group that meets in
the attic. I have to admit my ignorance. I never heard of them before.
Well, every project has to pass their muster before it can actually go ahead.
So this is in addition to the community boards and city planning. And
that's right. There's another group.
Okay.
And it is professionals, some government people, some architecture people. They are donating their time. They meet in the attic somewhere over at City Hall. So I'm told.
Or in the municipal building,
perhaps?
It is an
open meeting. You could go.
Okay.
And they okay projects. They say, you know, we like it. Too much mold. The molding's too big, you know. The door is too small.
Well, so this is for projects that are funded by the city then, I'm
That's
supposing.
Right.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. And while they actually have no real authority, they have kind of a pressure-like authority. So you need to get past them to go to the next step and get it built.
I like that. They're influential without being powerful.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And depending on who, where, and what, and when, their amount of power varies. Apparently right now they're pretty powerful. But these are all, you know, great projects that they've okayed, and they all have, you know, respectable, interesting architects attached to them. And they're for things like, I'm just looking at here, Pier 35, the Summer House on Music Island. Who the hell knows where that is, you know?
Music Island.
Yeah, I'd have to flip through the materials to find out where that is. The Ocean Breeze Park track somewhere in Queens.
Hmm.
Shoelace Park, Fort Knox Park, Marine Company 9 Firehouse.
There are all these places that I never heard of.
Yeah, but you'll know the names of the architects. Well, maybe. Maybe you'll know the names of the architects.
Well,
like, it's like Annabelle Zeldorf, Work AC. I mean, at least for Architects Newspaper, these are the stars. Sage and Coombs has a whole lot of them. I don't know quite how that worked out.
Hmm.
But
they know how to write a proposal.
I think you're right. A shop. Kind of hip. You probably angsted about them in connection with Atlantic Yards.
No, actually, Chris and Bill Sharpless were in this studio last August. They're okay. They haven't been back. Actually, they're not returning my calls. I think after they listened to the podcast, perhaps they weren't as enthusiastic.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
So your definition of cool is two appearances?
No, one appearance is fine. Actually, I haven't invited them back. I've just been calling them to see if they want to have lunch.
They're too busy for that.
They're too busy doing whatever they're doing, however it is that they do it, you know.
Which comes around to the thing of, you know, who's busy or not. And
well, they both teach. Most of those people teach.
A lot of architects get through downtimes through teaching, if they can.
Yes.
And that's a noble route. And I've noticed in my perambulations with a lot of architects that they're beginning to see things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the bigger firms are. The little firms are still kind of struggling. But everyone kind of thinks it's budging a little bit.
The firm that I was with, Perkins Eastman, that went from 1,100 people to a handful, keeps getting hired for projects that don't go forward.
Yeah.
So it's like, yes, we want you to do it. We don't have funding yet.
Yeah.
So, well, that's really cool. So what do you get if you get one of those design awards?
Nothing. A pamphlet. You get a little booklet. This is the Xerox of the booklet.
A picture of yourself being,
your
hand being,
shakes
your hand.
We'll shake your hand. It's very cool. It'll get you, may get you more city work. I mean, the thing is, if you've worked with the city once, it's so complex, it's so process oriented, such a pain in the ass, that you might get more work. Though it's a very, city work is a, you know.
Well, same with the federal government. You have to fill out the 255, 554 forms, and then you get vetted.
It's not that. It's not that. It's they have lists.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have your name on the list.
Mm-hmm.
And this is called, it's very confusing, Excellence in Design, but there is a Design Excellence Program. And you can only be on that list for 2 years before they shuffle you out.
I see.
And you have to be a certain size, and if you have one person over, blah, blah.
Very interesting.
But it is all part of an effort, which you've got to applaud for enhancing design.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's so much better than Chicago, where Richie Daley decides what they want to do.
Totally. We're learning that so much with our new Midwest edition that mm-hmm. it's...
Oh, yeah.
All about that.
Chicago is an autocracy. Mm-hmm. And woe to you if you commit a traffic violation, because Chicago's got more cops on the street than any place I have ever lived.
But he's kind of into design, or sort of. I mean,
Richie's into Mayor Daley is into the green stuff. He thinks it's good. Now, in terms of green roofs being mandated for all,
that's right.
City buildings.
They have the most green roofs of anywhere right now.
Well, that's his rule, and it's a good idea.
Yeah.
And. You couldn't get away with the kind of nonsense that goes on in Chicago, in New York. Too many voices, too many interests. Chicago is really a kind of a locked down kind of place. And witness the whole discussion about having handguns where they've abridged the Second Amendment. And I mean, as has New York City, but Chicago's even worse. Yeah. And that's a feature of Chicago politics, which... to some extent, we're seeing in Washington now with our new president. Luckily, not as bad as the whole Chicago thing. I'm allowed to talk that way because I was born in Chicago, you see.
Got it.
I'm allowed to run it down. Well, for me, one of the most interesting things under construction is Beekman Tower. But before we're really in a position where we can be in the headset to look at that critically, we need a little Hendrix. Would you roll that, please? Gee, I hope the left-right channel bit that Jimmy does there comes through in the podcast. Well, that's a perfect setup for talking about the Beekman Tower, designed by Frank Gehry. When you think about the whole period of time in the late 60s and, well, in Hendrix's case, and not the early 70s, he died in 70, late 60s, and that whole psychedelic world, really you have to wonder whether people who design 72-story mixed-use tower, such as Beekman Tower, had acid trips, because the facade, it's when I look at it, I have two thoughts. One, I think of Dolly with the melting wristwatches, because of the way that it ripples like the side of a melted candle, and at the same time it has that quick silver gleam.
I think of six packs of beer, personally.
Well, no, but for what it's trying to do, the curve of that melty kind of it was a building, but it started to melt thing. Oh yeah. My God, the building's melting.
It definitely ripples. It ripples like muscles.
Is interesting, and then it's so silver. It's so reflective. It's not burnished like, you know, the Disney concert hall, that because I, being me, being a science fiction aficionado, I think of the one scene in the first Matrix movie where Neo puts his hand through the mirror, and the mirror comes out and turns him into Quicksilver. Do you remember that? Vaguely.
Vaguely, though, in terms of sci-fi plot twist, the fact that reflecting titanium was frying people on the sidewalks.
Well, yeah.
A whole nother
in L.A., yeah.
Yeah.
I understand they had to put nets over it or something like that.
They had to do something, and pretty damn fast, to deal with that.
Yeah, as the sun came around, it was also blinding people who were commuting.
Trying to get by, right.
Which is a problem of having a high design concept that doesn't take into account the real world.
Always.
In this case, I'm wondering what reflective problems that the neighbors will have. As the sun rises, it's likely to reflect very far back into Brooklyn.
I think he's a pretty fast study, though. I don't think it's any more reflective than the Chrysler Building. God knows that's shiny as well. But
it's faceted.
This is faceted, so it'll shoot reflections all over the place.
Yeah.
But that'll disperse the light.
It'll be good. One thing I notice in your rag, or do you call it a book?
Oh, we don't call it a book. We just call it a newspaper.
Okay. Is that you really don't get too editorial. That's very interesting.
Well, we have attitude. What do you mean by editorial?
You don't hate anybody, you know? There are some people who need to be hated. You're able to write about the glass house here, you know, without getting...
I think there's a bit of snide in there. I hope there is. I wrote that one.
It's so... yes, I see that. JVI. Gee, I don't know. I mean, you don't come right out and call Philip a creep.
Well, he has a problematic past, and...
Well, yeah, there is the Nazi
stuff. He did not have much talent as an architect.
Well,
he was a brilliant...
He
couldn't
draw.
He was a very smart man, but the Nazi stuff and the kind of lame talent at actual architecture is a bit of an issue. But he was very smart. There's no question about it.
Well, he could be very charming.
And he could be very charming.
He was very nice to me on one occasion, and he was totally cold on another occasion. I'm going to have to save that for another edition when I do a monologue, Tales of Architecture, which some of my younger buddies really dig. But I don't see that you don't get too...
We try to have attitude.
You don't get too
we
high and
mighty. We have more attitude than...
Record? Than record.
We have a lot more attitude than record. But what we really have, and what architects really love, is that we have a gossip section and all our articles are short.
Where's your gossip section?
On page 3.
Let's see.
I don't know if there's anything good in there this time. You used to really get routine lawsuits. And we, you know, the times aren't really right for exposing.
People would sue you for libel?
Because we talk about marital indiscretions and that kind of stuff.
Oh, I remember those days. You've stopped that. Yeah.
We did. It seems kind of, you know, not nice. I mean, if someone.
Yeah, but it could be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Oh, actually,
I mean, unless you're outing someone's indiscretion that was not otherwise known by their spouse.
Well, we did that too. But even the august Terry Cobb of the firm I am Pay, you know, told me right off the bat that the thing he read first was a gossip thing. So we try to maintain the gossip, but it's not.
It's not as juicy as once it was.
I think so. Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
We try.
Yeah. Okay. My good friend Matt Arnold, who is a militant on the subject of who's teaching architects what and are they actually architects as full professors. I mean, that's his thing. That's his idéfice. Tells me that I should tell you that you should have me write an article about a history article. Because he would like to read about the history of some of the interesting buildings that are being renovated. So, like, the Flatiron building has just been redone. And that is something that I would love to do. That would be, you know, I could do that.
50 cents a word.
Really?
Barely. No. And
really? Jeez.
6 months late.
Yeah, well, 6 months from now, I could probably use $2. Well, that's really much better. I mean, I pitched a novelette to... Analog, you know, the sci-fi magazine, and they pay 9 cents a word.
Really?
But it was an 18,000 word. It was an 18,000 word novelette. Well, okay, so you know, like I say, $1,000 or something. You know,
our stuff maxes out at 400, 400 words.
Well, sure, because it's a newspaper.
Yeah.
It's not the Encyclopedia Architectonica.
The plan is you can read it all on a crosstown bus.
Back in the 70s. That could be a long time. Now that we have a little bit more congestion control, that's much better. So design awards are happening for these projects that the city is hoping to be able to pay for. And then we have other projects that are being completed that were funded a long time. I mean, Beekman Tower. I was in a firm that vetted projects before they got funded, and I myself wrote the review of the zoning analysis for that very project in 05. So and that's before Gary was even being considered as the design architect. Mm-hmm. So these projects have a long gestation period, and the projects that are being finished now are, I mean, either there's an Enrique Norton project that's just been finished and they're trying to sell it now, and it's kind of a boring looking building, but it's
great terraces.
Okay. And I don't see anything really new happening.
Well, this is I can tell you why you don't see anything, because you're looking too far up. I mean, I think right now in New York,
I see a lot of empty holes in the ground that...
Just forget those, because it's all about landscape now. I mean, why have it be about buildings? It may be
because because Tom Balsley gets too much work.
And, he does. He really does.
And
really does.
But he's very good at what he does.
He's pretty good. But everyone's in on the landscape thing.
I see.
Everyone's in on the landscape thing. And you look, Brooklyn Bridge Park.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the High Line is now the Second Coming, obviously.
Yes.
And it's just kind of astonishing that this thing that everyone wanted out of here under Giuliani is now, you know, New York's ticket to world recognition. And
go ahead.
I think last week.
Go ahead, bash Rudy. I'm perfectly happy to bash Rudy. You know.
Oh, he didn't like the High Line. He wanted it down. I don't think he even paid attention to it. But. It was a complete no-brainer that you get, you know, community involved in preserving this thing and give it a great design. And it's already beloved. It's considered like the greatest thing that ever happened.
And yet, it's only a mile. Yeah, and yet, you know, you do it once a year, maybe, because it's not a place to linger.
It's a little tough to linger there, it's true. But it's very pleasant. I mean, who doesn't want to be halfway up the side of a building?
Well,
that's cool.
That is interesting, because you do have that piano nobile kind of experience of surveying the surrounding landscape without having to worry at all about street traffic and stuff. But
it's cool.
But you can't
cool.
take your bicycle up there. You can't play Frisbee. It's not really a park. It's a promenade.
It's a promenade. But what's wrong with that?
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. New York hasn't had a proper promenade since it fell out of fashion to have the Easter parade. You know,
it is kind of like that Easter parade thing. But the fact that five people abreast are not punching it out to the finish is pretty amazing, because it's pretty tight.
It's
up there,
very dense.
Yeah. And that people still love it, even though it's beyond congested, is impressive. But and now we have Brooklyn Bridge Park,
which is wonderful.
Yeah, I haven't been there, but I've seen a lot of photos.
I was there about 2 months ago on a windswept Saturday. No one was there,
right.
Which was great. Great, you could actually see what it was. It seemed rather desolate though, because the trees aren't grown up yet.
Well, that was That was spring. Spring is desolate.
Yeah, but it's right on the water, and it's you know, at the edge between the upper and the lower bay, and it's like being on the ocean.
More of that stuff is coming. I mean, the whole east. I mean, I thought it was dead, but the whole east side thing is developing.
That's in your
bronze dog tree.
That's in your newspaper here.
Is it?
Yes.
But that's
East River Esplanade. Approach the now or never hour.
Ah.
You don't know what's in your own newspaper, editor.
But that's something else.
Okay. Oh, I see. That you had in mind, that you were mentioning.
That's Con Ed. That's
Con Ed. Yeah, okay. Well, that needs a little bit of beautification.
Yeah.
You know, a cruise missile would help a lot. that plant, you mean on 14th Street at the river. That's bad over there. what you're saying is that the investment in infrastructure is not going to get us any architecture. It's going to get us landscape architecture, you believe.
I think the interesting stuff in design, in many ways, is going on in landscape. And that landscape is a lot more interesting than infrastructure.
Huh.
As much as I love infrastructure. I mean, who doesn't love a water tunnel?
Yes.
And actually,
Or bridges that are
bridges
that are properly maintained or embellished.
Yeah.
Well,
who doesn't love a bridge? Though that has given Calatrava kind of
cachet,
a entree which he ought not to have.
You think?
Into, you know, the world of serious contemplation.
Ooh, now there's attitude. All right. Well, we can talk about Calatrava in a while. Let's take a little New York break with some Rhapsody in Blue and then come back and continue our conversation. Thank you. Welcome back as we are burning down the house here at HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Curtis B. Wayne, our host. This evening, my guest is Julie V. Jovine, the executive editor, or editrix, or aviatrix of the Architect's Newsletter. This
newsletter?
Paper. Sorry. I'm used to newsletters, you know, like the Kiplinger Report and things like that, the Architects. And I think that you've hyphenated it, apostrophized it in the wrong place. I mean, it's, you know, many architects, not just one.
We have a very picky art director.
I see. It's Architects, a singular newspaper. And we're brought to you by Fairway Market this evening. Fairway, the place to go for the best, most authentic, most fresh. Authentic, I said. Yes. It was telling me that. Oh, the architect Robert Marino thinks it's the last authentic middle class place to buy groceries in Manhattan. And perhaps he's correct. As you compare that with... you can speak up. You know, you live in Fairway territory.
I am now going to Fairway, and I went to Fairway. I used to live on the Upper West Side a long time ago when Fairway was much smaller, and now I'm back. And
it's big, but it's still.
I don't go to that one up there under the bridge, but it is.
Well, the one that where is it? 77th Street or something like that.
Yeah, about 74. It is has a true sense of place, and that is becoming more and more rare in the city, and I would contend that that's what architecture is about, creating a sense of place. And so I would say Fairway is
an architectural
architecture.
Event. Well, yes. Well, you know, it's there's more to built environment.
The circulation's really bad.
Well, yes, but if you've ever been to a Stu Leonard, it's, you know, don't complain. Have you ever been to a Stu Leonard?
Don't even know what it is.
Ah, Stu Leonard's of Westport, Connecticut. They have a branch right next to the New York State Thruway Toll Plaza in Yonkers, also. Anyway, it's Stu Leonard's. You go in the front door and you have to go through this sort of gauntlet. There's only one way through the store till you get out at the other end.
There you go. And who wants that? Nobody.
It's terrible.
Very Roman. Very Roman.
It's, you think?
Yeah, because the Romans in the ancient times, it was very specific. I mean, you had a staircase, possibly split. You had two choices, but that's what symmetry was all about, controlling where you went and when you went there.
And how you did it.
And how you did it.
Right. The procession of spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so... thanks for the cheery news that in the future we'll all have to become landscape architects, because that's what's getting funded. I mean,
I don't know what's getting funded. I would say, though, my interest is in where the particular creativity is, where the inspiring work is happening, and that's where I'd say the architecture is happening, where the interest in design is happening. But a lot of architects are getting, you know, they're not dumb. They are getting onto landscape as fast as they can. And it's kind of good for everybody that buildings and the place they build in are all being considered of a piece, rather than, you know, sticking a building and, you know, bring in the sod.
Yeah. Well, the whole... green movement with green roofs and other site specific integrative approaches is a good thing.
I promise you a anecdote that you don't want.
What was that?
Bert Resnick, a developer, one of the New York family developers who I interviewed recently. And
this isn't going to involve the USGBC, is it?
Not at all.
Okay,
not at
good,
all.
Good.
But he's an old New York family developer since 1928.
Wow.
And Douglas Durst, who, you know, you may know, is really, they've really, with Bank of America building, they really are claiming green as their thing. But the truth is that among New York family developers, green was really slow to catch on. They just thought it was expensive. They thought it was horrible. When it started at Battery Park City, they all revolted.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And when I asked Rudin about this recently, and he said, we're doing green now. If you look around my office, everyone turns out their lights when they go.
Well, you got to start somewhere.
You got to start somewhere. But on top of that, he said that they are looking at all their properties and thinking of sticking green roofs on top of them because he said the tenants like it.
Yeah, if you let the tenants go up there, you know.
This is true.
Yeah, but you
this
have,
is
you
true.
Know,
you can't always go up there.
You have to take the elevator another stop. You
can't always go up there.
You got to make sure that both stairs go up or all the stairs
picky,
go up.
Picky, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, well, you know, little things like you can't expect them to walk up there because then that's not equal facilitation for people who might not be ambulatory. But
the green roofs may just be for insulation. It's not really a
Oh, people just like the idea.
Flower picking place.
Yes, well, yes, the green roofs, Battery Park City and I was involved in several projects there, were not really envisioned as pleasure gardens. They were just there to reduce the solar load and also absorb some stormwater. You know.
The whole Battery Park thing, great experiment, but it's kind of eerie down there.
It's very eerie down there. I think after the street trees grow in, it'll be better. I mean, one of the problems with Battery Park City and patting myself on the back, I foresaw this. Actually, a classmate of mine and I studied the early proposals for Battery Park City in like 1972 or something for city planning class. We saw that because it's so cut off from the rest of the town by the West Side Highway that it was likely to be an upper middle class enclave.
There it is.
Because we studied mass transit access, and if there's no mass transit going to a neighborhood, either it will be very poor or it will be very exclusive and wealthy. And because this is all new construction, we didn't figure that it was going to end up becoming a barrio. And indeed, it is a sort of a ghetto of
suburbanism.
Yeah, fairly well-off people. A lot of whom are there because there were incentives given to move back after 9/11. But it doesn't have much in terms of street life.
It doesn't. It has this...
It's too clean.
It has this suburban feeling that is really kind of... doesn't quite belong there.
Yeah, kind of like those... what is that called? Celebration, Florida?
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, a couple of those other super planned whitey-white utopias. Not that I'm calling Battery Park City whitey-white, but it's not exactly, it's not Morningside Heights, okay?
Definitely not.
You know?
We have to worry about the Ground Zero site, which is right behind there.
Mm-hmm.
And near where I work, because it's really unclear how that's going to connect to the city. I mean, it's not really bridging Battery Park City major ways. There's some serious roads over there that are hard to cross. And
West Street's six lanes of pretty intense traffic.
Yeah. And the Battery Tunnel, for God's sakes.
And the passerelles that originally existed were only for people who worked in the World Financial Center, pretty much. The original World Trade Center campus
was seriously cut off.
It was. That in itself was a freaky and alien sort of talk about suburban. The whole concourse level below grade, it could have been a shopping mall. Anywhere.
It was a shopping mall.
Well.
You know,
a shopping mall, yes.
We just did a story about the history of planning downtown, which is coming out in our next issue. But there were over a dozen master plans for Lower Manhattan, and they all included mega projects. And we're kind of lucky that the World Trade Center was the only one that was really pulled off, because the idea was to have mega projects all over down there.
Wow.
And it really would have been devastating if any of that, had come through.
Yeah. So how do people get your newspaper? Do they subscribe mostly?
You can at archpaper.com, though in general it goes free to registered architects. You enter your registration number at archpaper.com.
Yeah.
Or go to archpaper.com and subscribe. It's not at newsstands or anything like that. Maybe Urban Center Books, which doesn't exist anymore.
No. They went out?
Yeah.
It shows you how often I buy architectural books.
Well, that's anomalous.
Well, but, I'm not a big book guy. I have to say, I have the books that I like, and occasionally I find a new one that I need. And
yeah, you mentioned Thackeray.
Yeah, well, you know, generally, because I run a very... enough about me. Anyway, let's talk about you. I could talk about myself for hours some other time. But in my house, if a book comes in, another one has to go out. It's just, that's about it. You know,
I'm the opposite, totally. More books.
Ah, you'd like my cousin
Connor. More is
Connor.
Better. More is better.
Anyway. Mega projects. Yeah, well, we've been saved from mega projects. Although, Rockefeller Center works very well as a mega project.
The occasional one kind of works, but I can't imagine, you know...
To have one after the next.
Cheek by jowl is kind of depressing.
And also, there's a real problem with 20th century planning theory with the big towers and the predestined public spaces. I mean, public spaces that just create themselves are so much better.
I mean, that's the real problem with the big thinkers that everyone still reveres, the Le Corbusier, bits of Frank Lloyd Wright, is that they saw it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not very human. It's not very, doesn't acknowledge how people actually work. I mean, much better is, you know, Blade Runner or something like that, that understands that things accumulate. Or what was that incredible movie, the Brazil?
Oh, Brazil.
Brazil.
Terry Gilliam's Brazil.
Who understand that architecture actually is, well, place making is accumulative rather than, a Godzilla footprint.
Oh, yeah, it's accretionary. You can't just come in and have one big plan. I mean, if you look at Philip Johnson's plan for Times Square, it's sterile.
Yeah, was that the one with the 60,000 pissoirs or something? I think that was Lincoln Center. He wanted 60,000 little mini fountains.
Maybe he was having a problem with his prostate at the time, but no, his Times Square thing was all these granite clad but otherwise Mesian towers, and as if then someone could paint it like De Chirico and it would be somehow poetic, but it was cold and it was harsh, and thank God it didn't happen.
He was not a good architect.
Well, no, he wasn't. He was a stylist, and he was his role really was to be a catalyst and a provocational agent.
That he was good at.
Yes.
That he was good at, and hooking people together and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he was very good at hooking people together.
Yeah. I mean, he was, after all.
I'm happy to settle myself for just being somewhat provocative.
Yeah.
Asking questions occasionally of people that they don't want asked. But not in your case. Not in your case. But this is a question that everyone wants to know. Who's looking for, you know, the implied third-party endorsement of appearing in your newspaper, is how do you find out about the stuff that you write about?
We have good connections. I mean, we have...
Well, do people send you press releases?
Well, everyone gets press releases.
Do they send you, like, press packages with gorgeous photographs?
That's all by email now, and that's kind of a pain. But... yeah, I mean, we have four or five reporters and who, you know, have their connections, and we're very well connected, and we get all the press releases.
Well,
true.
Having connections means that
people
have to know people. But if they don't know of you, I mean, if you don't know of them,
We know everybody.
You know everybody.
Architecture's a pretty small world. It's kind of
But you didn't
fun.
Know about this program until...
Oh, I didn't know about this
well,
program.
Well, so, I mean, you don't know everybody.
This is true. This is true.
I mean, we are in
our... lowercase everybody.
We are...
Small E.
We are... Thank you. Thank you. We are in episode 29. 29 hours
of
broadcasting devoted to design and architecture right here in Brooklyn.
Now I know.
Okay, well...
Because actually all my employees are here, live here, right here in Brooklyn.
And yet you didn't know. I mean, that is scandalous. We have to get the word out, but... Now we'd have.
Well, now you have, because now we'll just link this to...
That'll be great.
...our, you know, blog tomorrow.
Right. You talk now. I have to take a picture of the guest.
Ooh.
It's all right.
That's on the dicey side.
Oh, we'll make it very flattering. Go ahead.
Well, I gotta say...
contacts build on contacts, and people call around. It's like, you got anything good, and...
No, I mean, we check in with people. We have, like, theme issues and that kind of thing. And so we had right now we're working on glass. So we have to...
Glass.
And so we had a meeting and everyone pull out all the cool glass projects you have. And so, we just did our developer's issue. And that's what took me to... I actually, for developer's issue, I spoke with this Rudin...
Yeah.
Developer guy. I spoke with David Burney.
Well, you said Resnick before that. Did you mean Rudin?
I meant Resnick. Couldn't get Rudin.
Okay.
And I talked to David Burney.
Did you talk to Kent Swig?
Kent Swig?
Yeah. You don't know everybody.
Kent Swig.
Or did you talk to Harry Macklow?
Only needed one developer.
Oh, okay.
Don't know Macklow.
How do you do an issue about developers without talking to, like, without talking to Harry?
Well, we've done every year this time.
Did you talk to Mr. Trump?
No, I wouldn't.
No?
No. We take it, do it differently every year.
Oh, okay.
And some years we profile people, some years we do this, we do that. With no building going on.
Yeah, all right.
It's an additional challenge. And so this year we just analyzed Lower Manhattan. And I threw in the Resnick thing.
Well,
but,
Mr. Lower Manhattan is Joe Moynihan.
He's in the issue. I didn't talk to him, but he's in the issue. No, I talked to Vishal Chakrabarty, who's now the head of the Columbia Real Estate program, and he's always extremely eloquent.
Uh-huh.
And
well, Joe's not always eloquent, but he owns like Moynihan. Almost everything. Yeah, Moynihan.
Yeah.
Downtown.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to him finally finishing his W Hotel project.
It is. It is finished.
Is it open? I don't think it's open.
If it's not open today, it's open in a couple of weeks. It's done.
Yeah, that'll be very interesting to see. With the interiors by...
Who did the interiors?
Kraft, German designers. It's all this integrated... you have to go on their website and look at it. I can't even describe it. It's all swoopy and kind of If you took the interior of Saarinen's TWA terminal and made an apartment or a couple hundred apartments with that as a design motif, where the wall becomes the floor, becomes a counter, that's the idea.
Very seasick.
It's unique.
The for the Times, I wrote about the first W, which David Rockwell did, and... For a time there, they were shipping me off to spend the night at a new hotel. And so I'd spend the night and then write about it.
Very cool.
I only did two, but W was one of them.
Yeah.
And there was, that was the beginning of the boxes of fresh grass growing in your room trend.
Oh, yeah. The W at Union Square.
Union Square, exactly.
Sure. Well, they still have their grass going.
Yeah. They could well have it.
I'm sure they have a whole... light rack to keep the grass going.
Yeah, it was very crafty.
It's different,
very crafty. And
David Rockwell, someone else who I've not been able to get to come on the program yet.
David's always very busy, but you should try him now because he has his playground opening at the end of the month, and so he will be very excited about talking about that.
Where is that going to be?
It's at Burling Slip.
Okay.
And they hit Manhattan. It's the big blue blocks. They're like Legos. You move them around.
See, now Kent Swig was involved in helping to finance that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So who is this Kent Twigg?
Well, he happens to be Harry Mackelow's son-in-law.
Oh.
And Kent has been, and may still be, redeveloping the Sheffield Tower on 57th Street that shares a demising partition with Lord Foster's Hearst building.
Oh, the Hearst.
Yeah. And Kent's a cool guy. I like Kent.
Okay.
He's a kind of a surfer dude developer.
That's unusual.
Yeah, he still wears the surfer dude armbands and stuff like that. He's a very high risk, a high gain kind of developer.
Hmm.
And he's a character who deserves a little realistic bio, because he's one of the most interesting real estate characters I've ever run into. Smart as a tack.
Next year's developers issue.
Right.
I can see it now.
Well, I can't hardly wait for next year's developer, or for this economy to recover. Give me some new shoes. I can't wait.
System. Sexually based offenses are...
Thank you. Thank you. We've been burning down the house here with Julie V. Jovine, executive editor, editrix of the Architects newspaper, brought to you by Fairway Markets. I feel like that we've just scratched the surface. I mean, you're going to have to come back.
I hope so.
Good, very good. You can find the Architects newspaper at archpaper.com. It's a monthly.
Twice a month.
And if you are a registered architect, you get your own complimentary issue in the mail, but you can catch everything online. For those of you who don't believe in killing trees for the print media, damn you, you're killing off the newspapers. We've been talking about what's happening in New York, if anything. And this has been Burning Down the House here at HeritageRadioNetwork.com every Wednesday at 7. Thanks for listening. Play track 7, if you please, by Nick Agnetta, Geese.